oil, there's no gas, no trade with the outside world, they'd be threatened the way they, our Yemeni brothers actually acting on the Bab al-Mandeb, you know, the Red Sea. I think this is a very, very effective tool okay. in order to pressure the Israelis.
Very well. Thank you so much. We do appreciate it. Let me thank our guest, Larry Johnson, former CIA analyst from Bradenton, Florida. Thank you for your comments. And John Phoenix, thank you, journalist and international relations expert from London. Thank you to you both. With that, we come to an end for this edition of The Spotlight. From Mikhail Vitale and the team, it's goodbye.
This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran. This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran's broadcasting. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily via the internet address www.parstoday.com/en. You can also listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Intelsat 902, and Eutelsat satellite, as well as via internet. You can also listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for more details. Here, we enlighten you with the Ayah 61 of Surah Yunus, recited by Ahmad Mirzadeh Waqifi.
A'udhu billahi minash shaitanir rajim. Bismillahir rahmanir rahim. Wa ma takunu fi sha'nin wa ma tatlu وَمَا تَتْلُو مِنْهُ مِنْ قُرْآنٍ وَلَا تَعْمَلُونَ مِنْ عَمَلٍ إِلَّا كُنَّا عَلَيْكُمْ شُهُودًا وَمَا يَعْزُبُ عَنْ رَبِّكَ مِنْ مِثْقَالِ ذَرَّةٍ فِي الْأَرْضِ وَمَا يَعْزُبُ عَنْ رَبِّكَ مِنْ مِثْقَالِ ذَرَّةٍ فِي الْأَرْضِ وَلَا السماء ولا أصغر من ذلك ولا أصغر من ذلك ولا أكبر إلا في كتاب مبين وما يعزب عن ربك من مثقال ذرة في الأرض ولا في السماء ولا أصغر من ذلك ولا أصغر من ذلك ولا أكبر إلا في كتاب مبين صدق الله العلي العظيم.
In the name of God, the most gracious, the most compassionate. And you are not engaged in any affair, nor do you recite concerning it any portion of the Qur'an, nor do you do any work, but we are witnesses over you when you enter into it. And there does not lie concealed from your Lord the weight of an atom in the earth or in the heaven, nor anything less than that, nor greater, but it is in a clear book.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
Israel regime continues pounding the besieged Gaza Strip, where the death toll is near 19,000. UN agencies raised the alarm over the worsening humanitarian situation in Gaza, reiterating calls for an immediate ceasefire. The Yemeni army fires a drone at a container ship en route to Israel, saying its operations will continue until the siege of Gaza ends. Hello everyone and welcome to the World News. Now our top story, day 70 of the Israeli war on Gaza, where fresh airstrikes have killed over 24 people in the southern city of Rafah.
It is a residential neighborhood with only women and children. The residential neighborhood was razed. Debris is everywhere.
Israeli warplanes also hit a school in the southern city of Khan Yunis, killing 12 people. Overwhelming number of casualties brought to Nasser Hospital. There forced medics to have to treat the wounded on the floors. Also in Gaza City, at least two civilians were killed after a school was bombed. Death toll from Israel's relentless bombardment of the Palestinian territory is nearing 19,000, mostly women and children. Apart from rising fatalities, the Israeli onslaught is crippling critical infrastructure in Gaza. The Palestinian telecommunications firm Paltel now says that all services have been cut off again, making it tougher for medical teams to act. Homes reduced to rubble, hospitals packed with casualties, with nowhere being safe from Israeli bombardment. And despite all the pain and suffering, Palestinians in Gaza vow to continue their resistance in the wake of inaction by international bodies.
We have had enough of this war. I say to Netanyahu, whatever you do, the resistance continues, and our bodies are for the resistance.
The United Nations has been holding Israel responsible since our Nakba in 1948. What happened since then? It's all empty words. We are the ones who pay the price. They're watching the photos and nobody's saying anything. The bodies are all children, women and old people. They're all civilians. You know the numbers of civilians. Why are you still silent? Until when you will stay silent?
Hungry and terrified, that's how the head of the UN Agency for Palestinian Refugees has described Palestinians in Gaza. Philippe Lazzarini says that every place, including those that should be protected under the law of war, have been targeted by Israeli attacks. UN official also gives an account of the displaced people of Gaza.
Rafah is the epicenter of the displacement of the Gazans. There is over 1 million people who have fled in this governorate, and most of them, as we know, have been moved more than once since the beginning of the war. Rafah has quadrupled its number of people overnight, and especially when the offensive in the south has started. Everywhere you go, people are desperate, hungry, and are terrified. People, and this is also something completely new, people are stopping aid trucks, taking the food and eating it right away. And this is how desperate and hungry they are. And and you heard me many times, no place has been spared, not even the places which normally should be protected by the law of war. I was absolutely horrified yesterday when I saw a video circulating of an UNRWA school being blown up in northern Gaza. School, medical and UN facilities are not and should never ever be a target. Unfortunately, in Gaza, they have quite often become just that.
A senior official at the World Food Program has also raised the alarm about worsening humanitarian situation in Gaza. Carl Scow says half the population in the territory are starving. Says they found that during a survey they did during the last month, a seven-day truce in Gaza.
When it comes to the food security situation, we managed to do during the seven-day pause a survey, and what we found there was that half of the population are starving. The grim reality is also that 9 out of 10 people are not eating enough, are not eating every day, and don't know where the next meal is going to come from. We were showing during the 7 days pause that we are able to deliver, and to do that in an orderly way. We also had trucks and convoys going to the north, but that has not been possible since the fighting resumed. 2 million people have been displaced, and so this category of refugees and others doesn't really make much sense from an operational point of view at the moment.
Joining us now for an extended conversation on the atrocities in Gaza is Tim Anderson, director at the Center for Counter-Hegemonic Studies, joining us out of Sydney, and Paul Sheldon Foote, professor emeritus from the California State University of Irvine, California. Gentlemen, welcome you both to the program here. I guess we'll start there with Professor Foote out of sunny Southern California. Your thoughts on this protracted atrocities we're seeing in Gaza and why humanitarian aid is not being allowed in. It's one thing if you have an issue with armed factions in Gaza. What is your issue with the women and children that are on the verge of starving?
The aid that has been permitted in has been just a drop in the bucket for public relations purposes. Not enough for very many people at all. It's part of the Israeli calculation of forcing starvation and seeing how desperate America becomes and the Egyptians become. The current Zionists would love nothing better than to have the Egyptians break down and open the gates and let 2 million people flow into Egypt and be done. And they know that the American president is scared, but won't do anything in spite of the huge demonstrations we've had. The major cities in this country, we've had freeways blocked. Large numbers of arrests of Jewish Americans who have actually gone in and stopped cars from moving on freeways You cannot hide this anymore from the media. Even the vocal media in this country has to cover this. Biden knows he's in deep trouble in terms of reelection, but he figures, well, that's a year from now, so we'll see what happens. But it's a calculation on all sides. The president here won't budge. The Israelis certainly won't budge. They wouldn't mind if all of them died. Remember Rabbi Jacob Peron, who said that a million Arabs are not worth a Jewish fingernail. They believe this. They believe that any Gentiles are trash of the earth. And the bad part of it is that we have stupid Christian Zionists and others who support them and believe they're God's chosen people. Nothing could be further from the truth.
Thank you, Professor. And now let me welcome also Tim Anderson, Director at Center for Counter-Hegemonic Studies out of Sydney. Hello. Always a pleasure to check in with you, Mr. Anderson. Your initial thoughts on why we're not seeing a more unified effort to try to put an end to this. There are so many worldwide calls for a ceasefire obstructed by U.S. and some of the European allies that we're seeing fractures there. We're seeing fractures in how long and to what intensity between Washington and Tel Aviv the Israelis want to handle this thing and their post-war plans, which should honestly be up to neither of them to decide for the Palestinians. Your initial thoughts.
Yes, Yemen is one of the few Arab nations which is actually bought into this and is actively supporting the Palestinian brothers and sisters, effectively declaring war on the Israelis in a number of respects. Look, overall, I agree with Professor Foote. It's a calculated move by the Israelis to try and see if they can force some fracture or weakness whereby they expel or kill or eliminate in some sort of way the population of Gaza. They've clearly set about another phase of ethnic cleansing. They don't really seem to care that the world is identifying it as a genocidal operation. They are doing this because they really have no military capacity to deal with the resistance groups. They're suffering in the ground operation there, but of course when they bomb from the air, when they cut off food and water and so on, then they can have this terrible impact on the civilian population. And up until now, they haven't really seemed to care what the responses are, although there is, as you mentioned, a type of a fracturing, an alienation worldwide, because the conscience of the world has been woken up, and this is having an impact in the US and many of the so-called allies of the US too, that they're trying to distance themselves in some way from the horrific pictures that they're seeing. But the Israelis up until now have not been significantly restrained by their North American masters. And I say masters because let's remember the US is involved in the command centers within the Israeli entity. They have, they're supplying all of the weapons for the bombing. They are on the ground in terms of special forces and some mercenary groups too. So the Biden administration is very deeply involved in this, and the pressure on the Biden administration is very important because at the level of the Israeli military, the capacity is very flimsy. And of course, Netanyahu himself has very little support even amongst the Israeli population now. But no one seems to be showing the will to intervene to short circuit this terrible course of events.
Thank you, Mr. Anderson there. And Professor Foote, we have seen Yemeni armed factions sending drones and missiles toward Israel. We've seen them basically on the high seas right there in the Red Sea carry out a number of either basically laying siege to Israeli ships or targeting them with drones, Israeli-bound commercial carriers. Basically, what we're seeing is ignition of resistance factions, Hezbollah from Lebanon on the border there with the Israeli regime of occupied territories there. We've seen skirmishes there for over the last 60-plus days. This is the thing, I mean, many will tell you this is a powder keg about to ignite in the region. It seems like Washington isn't shown, and Iran has said this time and again, the concern that it should be that this thing could very well get out of hand and very soon here. Are you concerned that the Israelis don't respect an immediate ceasefire in the very near future, that this thing could really spiral out of something that may be out of everybody's hands contained at that point?
Absolutely. In recent days, the battles between Hezbollah and Israel have gone stronger and further. They've been playing tit-for-tat games for short distances, and then they keep increasing the distances. And then Israel says, well, you attack Tel Aviv, we'll level Beirut. So on that end, on the Yemeni end that you mentioned, we actually have one or more American ships in the area trying to intercept all the projectiles coming from Yemen against Israel. So here's the American military trying to defend Israel and using resources against Yemen.
Right. And Tim Anderson, why is that the policy for the U.S. right now? Why is it to try to come up with some kind of coalition in the Red Sea and in the Arabian Sea to try to thwart Yemeni's, efforts to try to help Palestinians of Gaza? Why not help the Palestinians of Gaza yourself if you're Washington and try to put an end to the atrocities that the whole world has been calling genocide for quite some time now? Instead of trying to thwart the Yemenis, try to get the Israelis to tone down what they're doing to the Palestinians and put an end to this thing.
Well, because that's a sort of logic which flows from, I suppose, a liberal way of thinking that the U.S. has an interest in calming things down. In fact, the U.S. is behind the Israeli operations. I think that should be more fully understood. They're providing all the weapons. They could stop this in an instant if they turned off the tap of all of the weapons and money to the Israeli regime. But they're not doing that because it suits them for the Israelis to keep doing what they're doing. Remember, the Israeli entity is not simply a Zionist project. It is also an outpost of the U.S. in the region. It's a way in which the U.S. and the British before them have tried to control this region. They don't really want to see the Israelis disempowered. And at the moment, the Israeli regime is very fragile. It's at great risk of collapse. In fact, in some respects, the Biden administration would prefer to see a different leadership of a second Israel, if you like. But that's not on the cards at the moment. So really, the U.S. is propping up this apartheid regime.
Thank both of you, and wish you both staying safe. Tim Anderson there joining us from Sydney, Australia, and Professor Paul Sheldon Foote joining us from Irvine, California. And we're going to go back to Zada, Yemen. Yemenis have been coming out in the hundreds of thousands at time in support of Palestinians in the besieged Gaza Strip. We've also heard that Yemen's naval forces, as well as the Yemeni army, have carried out a number of operations, both against the Israeli-bound ships in the Arabian and Red Sea, as well as launching drones and missiles directly at occupied territories referred to as Israel by many countries. Now, protesters say that they will continue these rallies until final victory for the Palestinians, or at least an end of the siege on Gaza, and that Israel, they will continue until Israel stops its genocide against Palestinians in the besieged Gaza Strip. Nearly 19,000 have been killed, most of them women and children, since October 7th. More than 70% of the critical and residential infrastructure of Gaza has been completely annihilated, and the Yemenis say that their operations against Israeli-linked ships as well as occupied territories will continue until this war on Gaza comes to a conclusion. And that's a wrap for your latest, everyone. We'll keep you updated with everything related to the besieged Gaza Strip right here, so do stay tuned, and goodbye for now.
Thank you. When the whole world is silent towards oppression, even one voice becomes powerful. IRIB English Radio, the voice of the voiceless. Our internet address is parstoday.ir/en.
Supplication on Fridays. In the name of Allah, the All-Merciful, the All-Compassionate. Praise belongs to Allah, the first before the bringing forth and the giving of life, and the last after the annihilation of all things. The All-Knowing who forgets not him who remembers him, and decreases not him who thanks him, and disappoints not him who supplicates him, and cuts not off the hope of him who hopes in him. O Allah, I call thee to witness, and thou art sufficient witness, and I call to witness all thy angels, and the inhabitants of thy heavens, and the bearers of thy throne, and thy prophets, and thy messengers, whom thou hast sent out, and the various kinds of creatures thou hast brought forth, that I bear witness that thou art Allah. There is no God but thou, thou alone, who hast no associate nor any equal, and thy word has no failing nor any change, and that Muhammad, Allah bless him and his household, is thy servant and thy messenger. He delivered to the servants that with which thou charged him, and he struggled for Allah as is his due. And he gave the good news of the truth of reward, and he warned of the veracity of punishment. O Allah, make me firm in thy religion as long as thou keepst me alive, and make not my heart to swerve after thou hast guided me, and give me mercy from thee. Surely thou art the giver. Bless Muhammad and the household of Muhammad, and make me one of his followers and his partisans, and muster me in his band, and give me the success of accomplishing the obligatory observance of Friday, and performing the acts of obedience which thou hast made incumbent upon me within it, and receiving the bestowal which thou hast apportioned for its people on the day of recompense. Thou, only thou, art the mighty ones.
In the limelight.
Would the Zionist regime have survived without the $130 billion in weapons and military assistance provided by the U.S. since the Zionist regime's creation in 1948? In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Stay tuned for the first part, please. Palestine Chronicle wrote, as the civilian death toll in Gaza continues to rise to unprecedented heights, reaching over 18,000 since October 7th, with more than 46,000 injured, one of the most distressing reports to come out of the war zone is the use of excessively heavy weaponry by the Zionist regime. In a report last month comparing Israeli bombings with U.S. attacks in the West Asia region conflicts, the New York Times pointed out that the aerial bombs used by American forces against Daesh in urban areas in Mosul, Iraq, and Raqqa, Syria were 500-pound weapons. But in contrast, the Zionist regime's liberal use of very large weapons in dense urban areas included American-made 2,000-pound bombs that flattened buildings, houses, and an apartment tower in Gaza while killing thousands of Palestinians. Mark Garosco, a former intelligence analyst at the Pentagon, was quoted as saying, "It's beyond anything that I have seen in my career." Now the question is, would Israel have survived without the $130 billion in weapons and military assistance provided by the U.S. since the Zionist regime's creation in 1948? And should Israel be charged with war crimes along with the U.S., the primary arms supplier of Israel? But both scenarios are not likely to happen. Any such attempts in the Security Council, either against the U.S. or Israel, will be vetoed by the Americans, as it happened recently on a resolution for ceasefire in Gaza. The resolution suffered a U.S. veto, even though it had the support of 13 of the 15 members in the Security Council, with one abstention by UK. According to a December 1st report in the Wall Street Journal, the US last week provided the Israeli regime with additional 2,000-pound bombs for the Gaza war. The US has provided the Zionist regime with large bunker buster bombs, among tens of thousands of other weapons and artillery shells, to help dislodge Hamas from Gaza. US officials were quoted as saying, "The surge of arms, including roughly 15,000 bombs and 57,000 artillery shells, began shortly after October 7th attack and has continued in recent days," the official said. The U.S. hasn't previously disclosed the total number of weapons it sent to Israel, nor the transfer of 100 BLU-109 2,000-pound bunker buster bombs. After sending massive bombs, artillery shells, the U.S. also urged the Israeli regime to limit civilian casualties, a warning ignored by the fabricated regime of Israel. The Mark 84, or BLU-117, is a 2,000-pound American general-purpose bomb. It is the largest of the Mark 80 series of weapons. Entering service during the Vietnam War, it became a commonly used U.S. heavy unguided bomb due to the amount of high explosive content packed inside to be dropped. Norman Solomon, executive director, Institute for Public Accuracy and National Director, RootsAction.org, told IPS military aid from the U.S. government has been essential for Israel to maintain itself as an expansionist country during the last several decades. He said that assistance has enabled Israel to systematically crush the human rights of Palestinian people while continuing to violate international law with occupations of Gaza and the West Bank. Israel has used its military might to, in effect, sadistically turn Gaza's residents into abused prisoners. Norman Solomon pointed out that much of the strength of the Zionist armed forces has been due to Washington's extraordinary quantities of support with military aid. Recent events have underscored how the U.S. regime is willing to step up military assistance with massive amounts of weaponry and other war material, while the Zionist regime continues to slaughter civilians in Gaza. Solomon, author of War Made Invisible, How America Hides the Human Toll of Its Military Machine, said, "The wanton and purposeful killings of more than 18,000 civilians during the last 2 months are war crimes that deserve unequivocal condemnation and prosecution. What's more, the U.S. government is more than complicit. It is an accomplice in these crimes against humanity." In recent days, a pair of developments involving the United States government have underscored its direct complicity in the ongoing mass murder by the Zionist regime in Gaza. On December 8, the U.S. regime vetoed a U.N. Security Council resolution for a ceasefire. The next day, the Biden administration disclosed that it is bypassing Congress to sell 13,000 rounds of tank ammunition to Israel. Overall, in Washington, bipartisan zeal is persisting to actively support the slaughter of Palestinian civilians in Gaza. Propaganda efforts to equate calls for a single standard of human decency with anti-Semitism are specious and demagogic, Solomon declared, adding, "Like a growing number of other Jewish Americans, I reject any and all efforts to equate Judaism with the regime of Israel. The government of Israel continues to be engaged in larger-scale war crimes with the support of the U.S. government. They should be unequivocally denounced and opposed."
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
Midstream.
The United States on December 8 used its veto power to turn down a UN Security Council resolution put forward by the UAE calling for an immediate humanitarian ceasefire in Gaza. "We do not support calls for an immediate ceasefire," U.S. Deputy Permanent Representative to the UN Robert A. Wood said before the vote. "This would only plant the seeds for the next war," alleged Wood with a warmongering tone. This was the disappointing diplomatic result of the UAE draft resolution, which calls for an immediate ceasefire in Gaza for humanitarian reasons, while calling for the protection of civilians, the immediate and unconditional release of all hostages, and ensuring the access of humanitarian aid. Despite strenuous diplomatic efforts made by the Arab Ministerial Contact Group emanating from the Riyadh summits in the capital of the most prominent member states of the Council, especially Washington, it was there where the Arab Ministerial Delegation met with several officials, most notably Secretary of State Antony Blinken and the Chairman of the Foreign Relations Committee in the Senate, Ben Cardin, and a number of committee members in order to persuade those concerned in the U.S. administration to vote in favor of the project. Hours before the vote, the Saudi Foreign Minister Faisal bin Farhan, speaking on behalf of the Arab group, called on the U.S. Security Council to take a decision to immediately end what bin Farhan called the war between Israel and Hamas in Gaza. While the Palestinian Permanent Representative to the United Nations, Riyad Mansour, appealed to members of the United Nations body to listen to the courageous and principled position of the Secretary General in reference to Antonio Guterres' activation of Article 99 of the Charter of International Organization when he called for a ceasefire in Gaza. During the voting session on the draft Emirati resolution against the backdrop of a sharp division in the Security Council, the Deputy U.S. Representative to the United Nations, Robert Wood, accused the Security Council of moral failure to condemn what he described as the terrorist attacks on October 7 committed by Hamas, including sexual violence and other unspeakable evils, claimed Wood, the slave of the empire. Wood continued by saying the resolution was divorced from reality, that would not move the needle forward on the ground in any concrete way. Oh, sure, Mr. House Slave Wood, it would only preserve the lives of 2 million Palestinians in Gaza after your bombs killed at least 22,000 civilians so far, including 6,000 children, you warmongering beast. The U.S. veto, however, was in no way a surprise for anyone. How could it be when it is U.S.-made bombs that is being dropped on the heads of Palestinians to begin with? Welcome to the Middle East Stream. I'm Marwa Osman. As expected, the United Nations Security Council failed to pass the draft resolution submitted by the UAE on behalf of the Arab group in light of the United States' continued opposition to the ceasefire in Gaza and its use of its veto in order to allow the completion of the Israeli entity's military operation, also known as genocide, in the Gaza Strip. To discuss this issue with us from Beirut is Dr. Tim Anderson, author, political commentator, and pro-Palestinian activist. It's a pleasure and an honor to have you on with us, Dr. Anderson. Now, as bombs continue to fall down on the heads of the Palestinian civilians in the Gaza Strip and the wild destruction all across the Strip, we see that the U.S. has once again used its power of veto to stop any sort of ceasefire that would rid the Palestinian people from the calamity that they are living at the moment because of Zionist Israel. But by vetoing this resolution, the U.S. is telling the world that it is complicit in the genocide and it doesn't care. Has that surprised you in any way?
Well, first of all, thank you for inviting me. In a way, it doesn't surprise me, but the extremity of the situation has shown us that really all of the so-called allies, or even the, you know, the lapdogs of the U.S. have abandoned them. The U.S. is alone with its colony, its forward base, effectively in the region, at the United Nations. It has no other support. It's extremely isolated. And I think this current situation is showing just how isolated the U.S., even other states, European states and so on, my own country, the government of my own country, for example, are ashamed to be seen to be supporting the U.S. in this genocide, as you say.
But as we heard the U.S. representative at the U.N. saying that in case of a ceasefire, there will not be any sort of maybe enhancement on the field. They really don't care about the people that are dying, do they?
I think it's worse than that. I think that they're not just, it's not neglect, really. They are directly involved. They are providing all the weapons. The Israeli army couldn't last for a day without the U.S. weapons. It's really the mastermind we're talking about here who hides behind its front people, basically. But the U.S. is behind all of the atrocities going on in Gaza today.
Well, Dr. Anderson, by continuing to provide diplomatic cover for the ongoing atrocities in Gaza, the United States is signaling international law can be applied selectively and that the lives of some people matter more than the lives of others. However, even with such a scandal, you think that the image of the United States of America really will be affected by the so-called international community's perspective to how it's operating this genocide?
Oh, yes, it's in serious decline. Of course, it was battered by many other factors in recent years, but this slaughter in Gaza is really sheeting home. It's doing great damage to the U.S. reputation, and that has important implications for its influence in the world and its attempt to get other states to support it. They're abandoning it on this one, and of course, in relation to Ukraine, the Ukraine war, its prestige, its reputation, its image as something which is a supreme power, the global policeman, has suffered extremely.
So it's a failure in Ukraine and a genocide in the Middle East. What is the U.S. telling the world at the moment?
It's telling the world that the U.S. is a lawless, exceptionalist beast which is involved directly in the worst crimes of this century, effectively, and the idea of it being a shining light, a moral beacon for others to follow has been undermined savagely.
Well, Israel has continued to indiscriminately attack civilians, the civilian infrastructure. We saw them bombing down not only hospitals but also universities and schools. They even the latest attempt of execution of Palestinian civilians by saying to the world that these are Hamas fighters who have surrendered, when we all know that they were displaced in a school and they were executed in front of their families. They are imposing a siege that amounts to collective punishment of the entire population of Gaza, even when aid is trying to get there. I was watching this morning a video when some of the Egyptian aid was trying to get into Gaza. The Israeli entity just decimated it. They destroyed it, and it was just packets of water packages for the Palestinians. But if a body like the United Nations cannot do anything to stop the atrocities committed by Zionist Israel, then what other option does the Palestinians have to put a halt for their calamity?
Well, they have their own resistance, and they've relied on their own resistance for a very long time, with only some very small number of regional allies who are supporting them in this struggle. But basically, the Palestinian people have been reduced to relying on their own resistance with very few loyal friends who are ready to help.
But is it enough? I mean, at the moment, is the resistance inside of Gaza alone enough to try and elevate maybe the suffering of the Palestinians, or at least put a halt on the Israeli genocidal warmongering acts?
It's not enough by itself, because really the international support for the regime is critical at this moment, just as it was as it is still in Ukraine, effectively, that the Kiev regime cannot continue without its international support. I think the Israeli regime can't continue without its international support. And that is why international support, the international discrediting of the Zionist regime, if it needs any more discrediting, is very important, because we have to find ways to dry up that continual resupply and support of the Israeli regime. Otherwise, it will go on for a very long time.
I know, Dr. Tim Anderson, that you came to Beirut after a visit to South Africa to take part in a conference, in a pro-Palestinian conference, especially at these very difficult times. Can you tell us how the reaction of the people that took part in that conference was, considering the genocide against the Palestinian people at the moment?
Well, there's a lot of grief, of course, in the world amongst many, many peoples who are witnessing these terrible crimes. There are no worse crimes, really, in living memory that we've seen. And, of course, the propaganda war carries on in the US in particular, or the Anglo-American world, let's say. But that propaganda war has been seriously undermined. So in South Africa, at the conference, we saw this was organized by the Global Campaign for the Return to Palestine and hosted by our South African colleagues, including grandson of Nelson Mandela, Mr. Mandela Mandela. It was a very powerful expression of support for Palestine, and also the parallels, of course, made between the dismantling of apartheid in South Africa and the need to dismantle the racist regime in occupied Palestine were very clear. And I think our South African colleagues put it very, very well, very, very strongly. And I hope that they will continue in the leadership of this campaign to dismantle the racist regime in occupied Palestine.
Well, we will continue to talk about how the world reacted to the U.S. veto and the carnage of the Palestinians that is being put forth and committed by the Zionist entity. But after the breaks, after the break, ladies and gents, stay with us because we will be talking about how the international community reacted to the U.S.'s veto.
This is Midstream, and here is IRIB English Radio. Dear listeners, in this weekly program, Marvo Osman discusses two important issues related to West Asia region with two political analysts. Midstream is with you every Friday on IRIB English Radio.
Many countries and international organizations condemned the United States of America's use of its veto in the United Nations Security Council against a draft resolution calling for an immediate ceasefire for humanitarian reasons in the Palestinian Gaza Strip. The convictions came one day after the United States used its veto during an emergency session to vote in the UN Security Council on the draft resolution submitted by the UAE, in which about 100 countries participated. More details in this following report.
Zionist Israel has continued to indiscriminately attack civilians and civilian structures, impose a siege that amounts to collective punishment for the entire population of Gaza, force mass displacement, and deny access to vital medical care and humanitarian assistance. And how did the U.S. respond to this carnage? The United States of America used its veto power to turn down a UN Security Council resolution put forward by the UAE calling for an immediate humanitarian ceasefire in Gaza. A surprise? Not really. But a damning testimony that the U.S. veto makes it complicit in the carnage in Gaza. Many countries and international organizations condemned the United States' use of its veto power and were vocal about the double standards and hypocrisy of the U.S. as its veto stands in sharp contrast to the values it professes to uphold. In his strong condemnation and protest of the U.S. veto, Malaysian Prime Minister Anwar Ibrahim said, "On behalf of the Malaysian government, I strongly condemn and protest the United States' use of the veto on a draft resolution for an urgent humanitarian ceasefire in Gaza." In statements he made to reporters, the Malaysian Prime Minister expressed his deep regret over the ugly veto as it neglected to see the cries and appeals of the international community. In turn, Iranian Foreign Ministry spokesman Nasser Kanani said, "The U.S. government has proven once again that it is the main actor and factor in killing Palestinian civilians and citizens, especially women and children, and destroying vital infrastructure in Gaza." While China described the U.S. veto as disappointing and regrettable, Zhang Jun, China's permanent representative to the United Nations, said, "Despite the use of veto against the resolution, the prevailing point of view of the international community is clear. An immediate humanitarian ceasefire is the highest priority." In response to the U.S. veto, Dmitry Polyansky, Russian deputy permanent representative to the UN Security Council, said, "It will not be an exaggeration if we say that today is one of the darkest days in the history of the Middle East, as our colleagues in the United States have sentenced to death before our eyes thousands, if not tens of thousands, of civilians in Palestine, including women and children, by obstructing the call for a ceasefire." As for the Organization of Islamic Cooperation, which includes 57 members, it said in a statement that this failure reflects negatively on the role of the UN Security Council in maintaining international peace and security, protecting innocent civilians, and putting an end to the deteriorating humanitarian situation as a result of the continued brutal Israeli entity aggression against the Palestinian people in the Gaza Strip. And in the context of its condemnation of the U.S. veto, Avril Benoit, executive director of Doctors Without Borders in the United States of America, said that Washington's use of its veto against the ceasefire in Gaza makes it complicit in the massacre in the Gaza Strip, while bombs continue to fall on Palestinian civilians and cause widespread destruction.
Now we are back with our guest from Beirut, Dr. Tim Anderson, author, political commentator, and pro-Palestinian activist. Again, it's a wonderful pleasure having you with us. Dr. Anderson, now, the United Arab Emirates Deputy UN Ambassador, Mohammed Abu Shahab, he asked the UNSC this, and I quote his question. He said, "What is the message we are sending Palestinians if we cannot unite behind a call to halt the relentless bombardment of Gaza? Indeed, what is the message we are sending civilians across the world who may find themselves in similar situations?" That is it? I mean, that is the reply that will come out from an ally of the United States of America, the best friend of the United States of America and West Asia? This is how they retaliate to the veto?
Yes, but if we look a little bit further, the United Nations media unit itself, the state media in my country, Australia, are being critical of the US, which is very unusual from agencies which are usually very subservient. So there is the cynicism has turned into a deep-seated criticism and an unusual expression from some who are allies or rather slaves of the US, that there is a certain degree of speaking out which is almost unheard of, really, because there is such a slavish support for US policies anywhere. But this slaughter in Gaza has upset that. It's turned over the apple cart, so to speak.
But, I mean, the Saudi foreign minister and the UAE also representatives were in Washington 3 days before this vote, and they were trying to lobby this resolution, and they knew that the U.S. will veto it. So is this just a show? Is this just a charade while people are dying under the rubble in Gaza?
I think that some of these Arab regimes in the Persian Gulf, you know, they are trying to keep some level of support from the Arab street, so to speak. The people in Saudi Arabia, the people in the Emirates feel very deeply for the Palestinian people. It's the same in Egypt, it's the same in Morocco, in countries that have normalized with the Zionist regime. Still at a street level, there's a very strong degree of support for the Palestinian people, and even the most brutal dictators like in Riyadh or anywhere in the world have to pay attention to that. Having said all that, I think you're right. There is also a degree of cynicism where there's an attempt to paper over things or rather reduce the embarrassment to the US, which after all is calling the shots in respect of its compliant regimes in this region.
Well, we also heard the Iranian foreign minister, Hossein Amir Aboulahian, warning of the threat of what he called uncontrollable explosion of the situation in the Middle East after the U.S. veto. Now, we all know that Iran, the Islamic Republic of Iran, is a vital member of the axis of resistance, if not a leader of the axis of itself. How can we translate such a warning by the foreign minister of the Islamic Republic at such very tense times while knowing the situation in southern Lebanon, northern occupied Palestine, and also the Yemeni situation and the Iraqi situation?
I think there's a degree of deterrence going on in terms of rhetoric, in terms of the possibilities of escalation. Of course, the US is sitting there with its own stock of missiles, and were there to be a serious escalation, each side is wary, really, of the extent of escalation. But the fact that Iran has significant missile capability means there is a certain deterrent there to the US trying to escalate the situation further. At a local level, of course, as you pointed out, there is the Yemeni involvement directly to attack the Israeli enemy and to prevent it being resupplied by ships. We have a fairly controlled degrading of Israeli military capacity by Hezbollah in the north of Palestine there. So there is, I believe, a fair degree of consciousness about the need to contain escalation, because escalation by its nature is unpredictable and no one knows exactly how far it will go. But on the other hand, there is this level of deterrence that's going on to one side trying to prevent the other side from escalating the situation further. And of course that's important, because the more isolated the Israeli military is, the more likely it is to take significant damage.
Do you think that is also equally
sustaining the idea of deterrence in Iraq and Syria as well, where we see it elevated escalation against U.S. bases?
Well, that's very important because it shows a degree of regional integration, doesn't it? And I think that the enemy is going to be very conscious of this, the fact that the Iraqi resistance is attacking U.S. bases, not just in Iraq, but in Syria also, in punishment for the crimes being committed in Gaza, is a significant statement in itself by the Iraqi resistance that there is this level of integration going on, and it's not no longer isolated wars. Really, there is a regional war going on, which the U.S. has been prosecuting for many years, as you know.
Mm-hmm. Well, Russia and China had their ideas about what this U.S. veto means, and they called it a double standard, since condoning the continuation of fighting while making reference to the protection of women and children and human rights is hypocritical by the United States of America. But might we see some sort of a Russian-Chinese approach to finding a solution to the ongoing genocide in Gaza, or is it just at the level of diplomacy and just registering certain points against the United States of America on the international community platform?
Look, I think the role of Russia and China will be important. Remember, all of these so-called new Middle East wars in this entire West Asian region were initiated by the US with the idea of trying to exclude its big perceived rivals, Russia and China, and the reverse has happened. Now, we now see very strong relations building between China and Iran, and Russia and Iran in particular, as you pointed out, Iran being the senior member of the Axis of Resistance in this region. So I think their role is going to be important in an ongoing sense, including in terms of the economic recovery of this region. But in terms of Palestine, I think at the moment we have to educate our friends in Russia and China and elsewhere in the world that there is no possibility of a two-state solution in this situation. There has to be a dismantling of the racist regime, as there was in South Africa with the apartheid regime there. An apartheid regime, let's remember, is a crime against humanity, and it's a crime to support and supply and recognize that crime against humanity too. Unfortunately, many of our friends in the world are talking about a so-called two-state solution, which presupposes recognizing the apartheid regime, the Israeli regime. That's no longer possible. That idea has been superseded a long time ago. But I think it's an ongoing obstacle to our friends seeing where the political resolution of the situation is going to be, because, of course, the occupation is at the root of all of this violence.
Mm-hmm. Well, in less than 1 minute, Dr. Anderson, you think that a call for a one democratic Palestinian state will help the carnage going on right now in Gaza, or will it just put Israel on an all-out war?
It has to, even if conflict increases, there has to be a clear focus, I believe, on what the political resolution will be. Many people talk about the necessity of getting rid of the occupation, having a Palestinian state, but I think we need to focus on the idea that there has to be a democratic Palestine. We're not talking about having a little Bantustan-like rump of a dominated entity like the Palestinian Authority is at the moment. All of the proposals from the US, which itself is talking about a two-state solution, have been this idea of normalizing the land theft on the West Bank, some sort of compensation mechanisms, but keeping the idea of a Palestinian state like the Palestinian Authority completely dominated by this vicious Israeli entity, and that's no longer possible. It's mm-hmm. not even conceivable under international law that there's that possible two-state solution. The South Africans know this very well, and they express it very clearly. There can't be a Bantustan solution in Palestine.
Mm-hmm. Well, Dr. Tim Anderson, author, political commentator, and pro-Palestinian activist, thank you very much for being with us. It's an honor to have you here in our Beirut studio to talk about the most important cause right now on the international community, on the globe, to be honest with you, the Palestinian issue. Thanks a million for your contribution to our show. And ladies and gents, assalamu alaikum.
In the limelight.
Western countries, led by the United States, have tried to save the Zionist regime from the quagmire. It is stuck in Gaza by sending various kinds of military aid, in addition to laying political support behind the regime after the start of Al-Aqsa storm operation. With the military aid and political support, the Americans and Europeans have played a major role in the killing of more than 18,000 civilian Gazans, most of whom are children so far. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Stay tuned for more. The Electronic Intifada wrote, Randa and her son Aziz used to live in Tel Al-Hawa neighborhood of Gaza City. As soon as the Zionist regime declared its current war on October 7th, the area was bombardment. Randa said, we did not sleep safely for even one night. On October 13th, the Zionist regime ordered people living in the northern part of Gaza to evacuate. Randa viewed the order as part of a psychological war, and I did not hesitate to decide that we should stay in our home, she said. But that evening, the bombing was crazy. She said, life was very difficult. There was not enough food or water for me and my son. The occupation cut off electricity and fuel, making things even more difficult. After the Zionist regime began a series of no-warning attacks on residential towers in Tel Al-Hawa, Randa and Aziz fled their apartment. They took shelter in Al-Quds Hospital, which is located in the same area. A neighbor who works for the Palestine Red Crescent Society brought them to the hospital in an ambulance, Randa said. The hospital is not far away from our home, but the journey was terrifying as the Israeli airstrikes were very violent. Randa described the situation in Al-Quds Hospital as catastrophic. She said, there were large numbers of displaced people everywhere. There were so many that it was not easy for doctors to walk through the hospital's corridors. Randa, 45, has health problems, including diabetes and high blood pressure. She and her son Aziz, 18, had to sleep on the hospital's floor. The bombardment in the surrounding area was constant. Windows and doors in the hospital were broken as a result. In November, the Zionist regime forced people to leave hospitals in Gaza City. Like so many others, Randa and Aziz set out through a safe corridor that was the very opposite of safe. They planned to reach relatives in Khan Yunis, southern Gaza. According to Randa, the journey was like a horror movie. She said, my son and I walked on foot for about 6 hours alongside large groups of people. The children were screaming in